I was just thinking about Tracy Kidder, who always said, you know, you don't have to go more than 45 minutes in any direction around your house to find all the stories you need. And I was thinking, well, I'm kind of tied to this desk, this chair, so I can't go leaving for like months at a time. But right out my door is the Cape Fear River, almost literally. And I've been on it. I've sailed on it. I've paddled on it. I've been in powerboats and ferries and fallen into it. And, you know, I thought, why not, you know, finally do it? And I realized as I got started on the adventure, as much as I thought I knew, I'm living here for now almost 25 years, how little I actually did know. And so, like every really good book, I think it was an adventure of discovery, going down the river saying, whoa, I didn't know that. Wow, how about that? You know. So I hope that my reader feels some of that sense of, you know, that discovery.
What were just a couple of the things that really, really surprised you?
I was surprised to learn just how many rapids there are in the river. Because we'd come down and we skipped a few sections coming down in the earlier thing and sent the B-roll crew out there to get it. So I didn't personally do some of the rapids, but there's some pretty boisterous water.
Well, it starts up in the Piedmont.
Yeah, so coming out right at Buckhorn Dam and down, there's nice rock gardens, these wonderful chutes and ladders that you kind of slide down and you have to read them. They change pretty much by the day and by the height of the water. But then when you get down toward Lillington, there's a whole stretch of rapids between there and Fayetteville, which are even in some ways more challenging. And they're a little more sudden. The horizon line comes up on you, and suddenly there you are, and you've got these things to negotiate. So it was a much livelier river than I thought. The other thing that I had not realized was that from basically the sea buoy off of Bald Head Island all the way to Mermaid Point, which is where the Deep and the Hawk come together, the entire river has been engineered. As wild as it is, as much of a boisterous river as it is, and as much wildlife as there is, as much as it's flooded over the years, people have literally engineered every inch of it all the way up. There was a time when steamboats were going all the way to Moncur. For a very brief period, they finally got them up there to get coal to bring down to Wilmington. And then the Civil War and the railroads pretty much wiped out that. So there are the remnants of all these old locks and dams all the way on down. And what the great news for the canoeist or the paddler now is, they form these wonderful rapids. And you're thinking, oh, all these square stones. Nature doesn't make square stones usually. And they're the remnants of the old locks and dams and canals and chutes that they made in order to get things upriver. So that was a little surprising. But you know, the river just does what it wants to do. It doesn't much care, I think, what engineers tried to do. It just keeps on rolling, man. It's a big river.
That's the fun thing. I mean, you're tooling along and having your adventures, but along the way you sort of go deep into the history and everything and the environment and so forth. This thing as you point out, I mean, the Cape Fear was actually a commercial pathway practically up to about the time of World War II, wasn't it?
Yeah, in fact, I remember doing the documentary back in '94 with Jim, and we had to get out of the way of a barge going up the Fayetteville, coming around a bend like hell bent for leather. So, yeah. People make their living on the river for a very long time, and it was an economic artery. I think of it, you know, with maybe the Mississippi and the Missouri as one of the great American rivers, maybe the Hudson, that really encapsulates history, environment, politics, pretty much everything that happened that's worth talking about in American history, politics, geography, environmental and natural history, somehow or other is connected to that river. And that's whether you're talking about, you know, all the environmental issues of water quality, or you're talking about Indian removal right on the Cape Fear, or you're talking about species extinction, the Carolina parakeet, whether you're talking about breaking open the wilderness as the first flatboaters and people went up the river. You're talking about the plantation culture, slavery, the Civil War, World War II, the shipbuilding. I mean, all of it is right there on the river. The various patriots that got together in Fayetteville, along with the loyalist Scots in Fayetteville, that ended up fighting at Morris Creek, you know, one of the early victories in the American Revolution. So there's just all this stuff. And when I look at the river, I just see the ghosts piled upon the ghosts. It's almost like looking at one of those wonderful topo maps where you can just keep on removing one layer of overlay after another. And there's the city, but you take that off. No, it wasn't such a big town back then. It was smaller. And here's Lillington back in the day. And you know, here's Campbellton back when it was Campbelltown and Cross Creek and not Fayetteville yet. And all those things. So.
But one of your interesting points is that is all the towns along the river that have sort of like turned their backs on the river.
One of the things that I focus on in the book is that so much of the history didn't just happen to happen along the river. It happened because of the river. The plantation culture is there because you didn't have railroads or regular roads. You had to get by ship and by small boat. And on the river, you can have plantations because you can then offload the goods. You can bring in everything from manufactured goods to slaves to building materials and that. And that's true of all the towns. You know, Elizabethtown started as a landing to bring produce back down to Wilmington and transship it. And pretty much all of the Fayetteville was up there for power for the mills and so forth. But then at a certain point, the more modern iterations of those cities turned their backs and just sort of built, let the river be and almost pretended it wasn't there. And it wasn't until I was talking to David Averett up in Lillington, who runs the Howard's Barbecue. So here's a pitch for a great barbecue sandwich. And with a great view of the river. And he was saying, we have to understand that people were afraid of this river for many, many years. Long before the Jordan Dam really engineered the river and engineered the water flow, the river would periodically flood and wipe out everything. It wiped out Fayetteville a couple of times. It wiped out Lillington. It wiped out the bridge at Lillington twice. It wiped out a couple of other bridges further on down. You know, it was one of these things that if you got too close to it and the wrong things happened upstream, the next thing you saw was a wall of water. And after the water went down, you know, he was talking about going hunting with his dad and finding stills up in trees, you know, that had been washed up there because the water had risen so high. So it's taken a whole new generation to kind of get back to saying, wait a minute, we don't have to be afraid of the river. Now the water level is leveled by the Jordan Dam, and the engineers are keeping pretty good tabs on it. So it's not going to do that anymore. And now people have kind of crept back. And I'd love to see a river walk at Fayetteville. I'd love to see Lillington and Elizabethtown really embrace the river. Lillington has a little bit because you have Cape Fear River Adventures, Dale Riles, and Howard's Barbecue on the river. He actually started the Cape Fear River Adventures back in the day. So they're putting, you know, several thousand canoeists on the water every year. I'd love to, the more people get on the water, the more they're going to love it, the more they're going to understand how valuable it is and do something to keep it.
When I read your book, I was interested in your definition of what is a river. Can you kind of paraphrase that?
Yeah, because we think of a river, I always did. I mean, because I grew up on the Delaware River, and you look out, the Delaware River is just this like big, sloppy thing of water heading down a course. And usually you see a river in a slice. You're crossing a bridge, you see maybe 200 yards up and 200 yards down. You know, even if you fly over it, you're likely to just see the main stem. But if you look carefully, you understand that a river is whole watershed. It's kind of like a gigantic living organism. And all of these literally thousands of miles of feeder creeks above, you know, in the watershed out in the Piedmont feed in. And their little runoff seeps and trickles, and they turn into streams and creeks, and finally they're tributaries, and they rush into the Cape Fear. And that's all cleaning out the land. That's kind of, then in the lower part you've got the wetlands, and it's kind of like the lungs of the ecosystem. And along the way you've got not just all the animals living in the river and on the river, you know, fish and mollusks and all that, and then various kinds of turtles and birds that float on the river and fish in the river. But you've got an entire three-dimensional kind of glide slope, of, if you will, above the river. So the different birds are actually inhabiting different layers of the canopy, and they're going about their business of mating and fighting and hunting bugs or whatever they do at different levels above the river and on the river. So you've got a three-dimensional thing that is absolutely alive and complicated, in which everything is interconnected, and so anytime you monkey with one part of it, you're monkeying with all of it. It's kind of like your body. You've got bloodstream, you've got heart and lungs and liver and brain and all this stuff. And you say, well, I'll just cut off one finger. That's not a big deal. Well, yeah, it sort of is, isn't it? Or I'm just going to clog up one artery. Well, if it's the wrong artery, you're dead. So that's the way I think about the river and the river system, that it isn't just that one big main stem you can see from the air. It's all the tributaries. It's the spider webbing of all of those little tiny seeps. It's the lungs, all the wetlands over which the river spills when there's heavy rainfall. It is the quality of the land on both sides, what's running off into the river becoming the water. Because the river isn't just the water. The water's gone in 24 hours from wherever it starts to wherever it goes out. It's the whole thing. It's the birds that are there and the amazing amount of wildlife that lives along the river, which again astonished me. You know, black bears, minks, coyotes. Who thinks of coyotes? We counted all these species of various birds, and you know, eagles and it was like walking into a nature documentary.
Seahawks.
Yeah, the ospreys. We literally, I say in the book, it's a one-in-a-lifetime thing. We actually saw a fight between an eagle and an osprey over a fish. In aerial combat, you know. We sat there like with our mouths dropped watching it. And then, you know, watched the end of it. So it is all one thing. And if there's a message in the book, you know, although, you know, I guess if you want a message, just use Western Union. But it is maybe a paradigm for how I looked at it was that it is a complete whole thing. And when you begin chopping it up, then you begin losing it. And I think that's a good lesson for any habitat, but especially a riverine habitat, because it starts here, it comes out here, and it's got to all be together. It's all going to be one thing. If it's interrupted at any point, it's no longer a river.